Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to this week's Runner's World podcast with me, Ben Hobson. A solo roving reporter episode from me today, but please don't let that put you off, as I've tracked down a former guest and the massive running brain when it comes to all things injury, Mr. Gareth Cole. I wanted to talk to Gareth about the knee and why it's always the centre of attention for all the right and wrong reasons when it comes to running. And so we broke down basically what the knee is, what it does, what affects its function, and how to protect it best as possible from the forces of running. So without further ado, here is our guest of the week.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
I am joined today by former guest and founder and head of performance at Coach London, Gareth Cole. Gareth, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Ben.
We spoke before about the gait cycle.
We did.
And if anyone hasn't listened to that one, they should, because it's incredibly informative and brilliant. But this time you are back to talk about knees.
Yes, knees in its entirety. A strange name of a joint, isn't it, really?
the broad spectrum of the knee. It's kind of almost like the great villain with running.
It is. It's the victim.
Yeah,
it's exactly. The victim. It really is.
Yeah.
It's patellofemoral pain, really, in runners is the number one thing. It's predominantly, really, it's a symptomatic thing, but not the causation.
This is
the problem. Mm. It's got a big ball above it and a big ball below it in the hip and the ankle that wants, has so many degrees of freedom, it wants to move around a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And the knee is just a hinge joint. It has a little bit of rotation, but on the whole,
yeah,
all those forces and torques are going through that joint.
This is it. Right. So let's get into the knee at a very basic level.
Okay.
What does the knee do?
Okay. It's a hinge joint,
yeah,
which generates force, but it also absorbs force in locomotion, in gait, in any sort of dynamic or static movement, really. It also takes load from the floor through the ankle to the hip to generate those sorts of forces, really.
Yeah.
It's got a real multifactorial role to play, really.
Yeah.
In movement.
In just general movement. And and as you say, it's often the victim, it's often the sort of the point of much distress for runners, perhaps, in sort of like it builds to be the problem area, but it's never the knee's fault.
Well, it can be.
It can be
the knee's fault, but a lot of the time it tends to be, it's an investigative sort of procedure, really, in seeing relative to the foot what's going on, relative to the hip. I mean, what's the availability of the runner in regards to what constraints? I mean, what is the hip doing relative to the knee? Is it internally rotating? Is it creating those medial forces or lateral forces? And then there's the musculature as well.
So what are the main influences on the knee then, when we're talking about how the knee functions? Because it's a hinge joint, it goes up and it goes back and forth.
It does. It goes forwards and backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. So where does the strain come from? What are the outside influences that affect the knee when running?
Okay. Yeah, and it's, you can really get into this, but everything that crosses the knee, every muscle that crosses the knee plays a part. So people just think the quadriceps and knee extensors and the hamstrings and knee flexors. you tend not to talk much about the abductors and the abductors, the abductors, adductors. All of these play a role in trying to keep that knee in that sagittal forward and backward plane in movement. And again, the gastroc crosses the knee, anterior tibialis. So all of these, all this musculature together either contract, co-contract, or within milliseconds are contracting and relaxing to try and keep that joint in its optimized position, really. Yeah, so does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, I mean, the very beginning of it, perhaps. So when you sort of like, and when we'll dive into sort of like potential issues, but I guess like muscle strength and weaknesses then come into how the knee behaves.
Yeah, it does. Like, say you've had a pathology, say you've had a problem with the knee. Yeah. So that muscle that crosses that joint can turn off, or it can be, it's not inactive, but the body will just use other muscles to perform that task. So it's little things like this. There'll be a history of this, and they need to be checked, really, because it might not be the most optimum way for you to move. And then over time, you'll find yourself using the quadricep more or using the hamstring a lot more or less to perform that task.
Yeah, I mean, definitely anecdotally from my point of view, quad has always been...
We've checked that before, Ben.
Yeah. The dominant force in the knee and issues that have then occurred. But as you say, it's what I've learned about that joint is that it's influenced by so many different elements and has these tricky components within it, ligaments and meniscus and all these sort of elements which can naturally wear. Can wear due to trauma. So it's kind of like, you know, the balancing act of the knee tends to take quite a lot of the brunt. And obviously there's the fabled, like, running is bad for your knees. But actually, the knee itself is a joint doing its best to cope with all the...
Really is, And if you look at the forces on the knee, they tend to be, or they are, a lot higher in that deceleration. So mid-stance in running, going downstairs... So even though the quadricep is described as a knee extensor, it's actually controlling decelerating knee flexion, which is the more important role. That's where those big forces are coming in. When you slam your foot down into the ground, that quadricep's got to do a lot of work to stop that knee just flex to the point you're on the floor. So those forces really, and again, from a training perspective, from a conditioning perspective, you have to at least... take that into account from a runner's perspective about how that quadricep acts and works within that given task.
Do you find when you're addressing knee issues, when people come and see you, is it predominantly a quadricep issue, or could it be absolutely anything? Like, is it?
It really is. The quadricep plays a role for sure. But for us specifically, we're looking at joints to begin with. And again, I went back to affordances and constraints and things, but what is the hip doing? You'll see a lot of, there's something called anti and retroverted hips. So you'll see people's feet pointing in and pointing out. So that's your base of support. So when you land, what is your foot and your hip doing? And is it the optimum way for that knee to be able to move? Or is it being forced into rotational torques or lateral torques? So all of these things really play a role. So the quadricep, to answer your question, is definitely a big player there. But there's an awful lot more going on that you definitely have to check to try and find causation.
So when you're working with runners and you have a sort of the knee is perhaps they've got an issue, they've got some pain, patella could be flared, or they've got like MCL, ACL kind of different pieces. What's your process of assessing the knee? I mean, you've certainly done it to me where you've seen any sort of anterior tilting of the hips and sort of, you know, and watching my feet, whether they're in and out and all that sort of stuff. So if someone's at home lying on the floor, how could they assess? What could they do to sort of like look at how their hips are behaving?
Yeah, well, I think there's two. There's passive sort of assessment where somebody's lying on their front or their back, and there you can just assess passive joint ranges. So if you're lying on your front and you grab your foot or you get somebody to bring your foot towards your glutes, you'll start feeling an increase in pressure at the front of the knee. And that will give you an indication of how much joint range that you have. Yeah. So, but that doesn't really tell you the whole story, because once you get on your feet, then, the motor system's in play, other joints are at play. So what's going on there? So you can isolate and have a look at the joints, but then you need to integrate it as well on the feet and, you know, have a look at somebody walking, have a look at somebody running. Then you start seeing, with a good coaching eye, you'd be able to start seeing those forces at play.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and that's the forces is the bit. It's controlling the forces and making sure that the forces are being sort of transferred through the body in the most efficient way, right?
Exactly.
And that's where you get an issue sometimes with the knee because it becomes pushed.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a big motor skill element to this as well. So people can overstride from the front. I mean, running downhill, I mean, a huge amount of torque's going through the knee. So what's going on there? Are they shortening their stride? What sort of skills do they have at playing perspectives to be able to deal with that particular specific task? These need to be addressed. Volume's a big thing. Yeah. You know, how many miles are you cranking out? I mean, telling a runner to stop running.
It's impossible.
It's not something. You got to be very careful what you say. Very, very careful.
I think that the other thing with knees is that they always sort of like the aches and the pains when you do add mileage come in, and everyone sort of like considers the knee to be the first point of weakness.
Yes.
How do you address that again? Is that all conditioning? Because naturally running should be that thing that we go and do.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know the body copes with it and path of least resistance and all these sorts of things.
Yeah.
But if you're dealing with someone, if you had someone come to you and they were like, blank piece of paper, I want to start running, I'm going to go for the marathon.
Okay. How long have we got?
6 months.
Okay. All right.
What would you do? Like, if you were thinking, if you watched them walk and you saw actually, right, there's instability here at the hip and it's going to transfer to the knee. How would you build into?
Yeah. So that, I mean, as a performance coach, you're looking at how do you manage that time within that 6 months? And you kind of retrograde it. So you look back at, right, we need this runner to be able to perform on this given day and then work backwards. So then you get your findings and your assessments and your analysis. And then you look at that and think, right, then where's the best time spent here? Is it motor skill? 6 months, you can pick up skills quite quickly. And what I mean by that, I mean, is can we change the way in somebody actually runs to be a lot more efficient? That's not a bad place to start. Because if you have, again, your foot landing underneath your hip, if you've got good cadence, if you've got a good stride length, and forces are being controlled, and then you build that volume over time with no injuries, no pain, you're recovering quickly, then we're onto something. So shoe choice is a huge thing as well. So minimal drop or the kind of minimalistic shoe as well. And some people can take that. There's a lot more going on at the ankle and the foot. Some people can't. But these things all play a role as well. So, and then from the conditioning perspective, it's what the runner presents. And they obviously need to build volume. They need to build mileage. But there's the conditioning and the strength element to it. Strength, endurance, tendon, and predominantly just tendon, really, a lot of the time, from a muscular perspective, needs to be robust. It needs to have that stiffness. It needs to be able to work for long periods of time. I mean, these are huge amounts of repetitions when you're building for a marathon. And then there's recovery strategies as well. So it's not cookie cutter. It really is. You can't just pull this A4 off, you know, A4 sheet program off the side.
Yeah, exactly.
And just go, right, do that.
Yeah.
And you can do, and a lot, you know, robust enough to get away with and have the biomechanics, a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
So just some real small interventions can make really big wins, but they've got to be the right ones.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And how about the ankle? Because, you know, in terms of flexing and stiffness in the ankle and how that can affect the knee.
Yeah, well, obviously the ankle and the foot has a lot of degrees of freedom. There's a lot of eversion and inversion of that calcaneus, that midfoot pronates and supinates. So these are all three planes of movement. And that knee only just wants to go one way. So again, you're looking at people walking with their shoes off. You want to check MTBJ, the big toe. You want to see if that has it got the range. So again, we're looking at what's available to the runner and what isn't. And then what is the best way forward, really, for that person to complete this task of the marathon.
An understanding, because it's certainly something that I had no real understanding of. And when I got knee pain, I was just a bit like, oh, wow. Must be just that my knees are...
Well, people go straight to ITB. Oh, it's runner's knee, and it's ITB. Let's get a bit of rolling in, and we're fine.
And then you get a scan.
Yeah.
And then as we age, as we age, we get natural wear and tear. But in my case, it showed meniscus damage. So yes. Immediately surgery is on the table because it's yep. meniscus, and that's kind of the default action. But you know, I've seen you about it. You tested how the strength of my knees.
Yes.
No problem.
Yeah. The range of your knees, yep. Great joint ranges, great strength.
So it's this unpicking. You've got imagery, which leads surgeons to consider yes. that's the option. Yeah.
And sometimes that is the right option.
Of course.
Sometimes that is.
Yeah. I mean, certainly Rick, who co-host, he had surgery on his knee because it was causing locking.
Yes.
So he needed to sort of like, he couldn't, whereas I never had that. So there's these different scenarios where the knee very much so. Does need treatment or doesn't need treatment. But I think it's just the sort of unpicking the knee as the sort of middle ground between the other parts of the body.
Yes.
And how yeah. it's influenced and sort of addressing that. So in terms of components in the knee that are liable to pain, start at the front.
Yes. Yeah. So patellar tendon's a big one. Yeah. That tends to, all that musculature in the quadricep really all feeds into that patellar tendon. And whatever the knee does, the patella does really kind of, it works together on this. But obviously meniscus, yes. You know, there's medial lateral meniscus as well. There's all sorts of different tears that can occur at the meniscus as well.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So with the patella is basically, if people are holding their knee, it's the sort of the underneath the kneecap, it's that bulge.
So the patella tendon, So the patella itself is obviously the kneecap.
Yep.
Then underneath that,
yeah.
Then you have things like bursas, and you have the tendon itself.
Mm.
But you've got pretty much the tibia sitting on the knee.
Right.
And then there's cartilage, ligaments, and tendons all trying to control that joint.
Yeah.
Really, and the musculature, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
But one of the big things, I think, from a runner's perspective, is their rise and fall when they're running. Yeah. If you just look at the rise, a nice take home here would be just pick a point in front of you and have a look how high and low it's going. The more you go up, the more that knee has to decelerate you. And we're talking forces 3, 4, 5 times body weight at times for long periods of time. So it's a joint. It's going to wear. So can we make some small interventions to help that?
Do you prescribe to like quite heavy lifting? If you're sort of dealing with someone who's, you know, because if the quad isn't up to task in terms of endurance and power, and obviously people are running a lot, which means their endurance is good and that muscle function is good, but they're probably not lifting a weight of higher caliber. That something that you would prescribe to someone
definitely. I think it's actually essential within especially marathon but all running really. There has to be a part where you address the musculature and the quality of that muscle as well. What's it doing? Those contractile forces, in a gym setting, in conditioning, you can actually increase those forces. So when you're out running, you've adapted to those forces, to those stresses, and you're able to, with good volume and with good programming, you're able to consistently improve over time. It's 9 times out of 10, it's normally a breakdown of the conditioning a lot of the time, or the volume. And you've got to look at both of those things together. Where are the weaknesses? What we need to, a lot of hamstring can be avoided. An awful lot of it can be, especially eccentrically. So, you know, what can we do here? What intervention can we make to make sure that that hamstring is really helping that knee, especially in the mid-stance phase, but also that propulsion phase as well? Really important.
Yeah. So a bit more on that, because everyone always thinks propulsion, they think quad and power and drive.
Yes.
But actually, the posterior chain in running.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Glutes, hamstrings, and then how that behaves with the knee. Just a bit more, like, how do those things actually correlate to the gait cycle in the sort of...
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating because everyone's presenting again a slightly different way in which they're doing this. But a nice rule of thumb is the faster you go, the more posterior chain, the more gluteal, the more gastroc, the more hamstring you're going to need to use just to propel yourself forward from those ground horizontal and vertical ground reaction forces. But they still play a part in endurance running, those upright runners as well. So it's definitely something you need to address there. But like I said, in the front of the leg, you've got the anterior tibialis, which helps in dorsiflexion of the foot. But when your foot's on the ground, again, it helps the knee and the quadricep stay in position.
Mm. Dorsiflexion is literally the way that the foot...
Yeah, so if you bring your toe towards you, yeah, that's a dorsiflex movement. But it's also relative to the knee and the tibia. So when you plant your foot, yeah, your ankle is dorsiflexing. So it's actually, you're creating a smaller angle there because the knee is moving towards the toe. So that's the dorsiflexors, really. But yeah, so both anterior and posterior chain both play a part. And it's when you're looking at somebody running, you can actually see predominantly where they are and what they're doing.
Yeah,
really.
It's amazing when you watch. I mean, it's quite... To talk about how an elite performs is obviously quite... It's quite a good example to look at in terms of when you see someone running and their heel is basically grazing their bum with every stride. Oh,
David Rudisha, watch him. Absolutely.
You see someone like that. Beautiful. And... you can see the role that like something like the hamstring plays.
Oh, because yeah. It pulls that toe up off the floor.
It pulls that toe off the floor and it brings the leg back up towards the bum.
It
and
does.
Then, you know, it's everything's neatly tucked in. And you might, if I see myself running, if my heel goes above my knee, you know, like it's
exactly.
Kind of, that's like a, yeah. I think I'm doing great things. So you can really, if you watch people and consider the function of the muscle, then that's really where you can see the difference.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And another thing for the hamstring is it plays a huge role. I mean, in the swing phase, people think, well, the foot's off the ground, it's not doing anything. But the hamstring decelerates hip flexion. So the leg just doesn't swing all the way forward. So that changes stride length. So it's doing an awful lot in propulsion, but also in deceleration as well, all the time. Most muscles are doing that. And a good way of looking at it is, how are you decelerating? That's where the forces are. And we tend to think about, you know, power and force, but you need to control that. Yeah. Yeah. So the hamstring's multi-role.
You're a man who loves to read, study, and to keep up to date with the latest thinking. With things like meniscus, which is probably certainly people who've had knee issues who are listening to this may well have been something that they've been told might be an issue. What's the latest on how do you treat meniscus? I mean, obviously we've talked about it. I guess it's a pain level and an interference with being able to run is the kind of the things, but the sort of tides have shifted quite significantly on what meniscus damage is and how to treat it.
They have, and there's non-responders as well, to the point where, and what I mean by non-responder is you can do an awful lot of conditioning with them, think you've got causation, think you've got, you know, I mean, meniscus tends to be a torsional or a rotational force going onto the knee, and there's going to be lots of them happening at the hip, happening at the ankle. So, but also there's compression and understanding how much load is going through that knee. But you can have a scan, like you said, Ben. You can see there's a bucket tear or there's something going on. Some people would say, I'm absolutely fine. No pain whatsoever. And then others are coming in and they're running. But the scan has shown something. There's some inflammation of some description and they've gone and got it scanned and they go, oh, right, this is the problem. But everyday life, it isn't the problem. And there are others who have no meniscal tear at all, but have a huge amount of pain going in through the knee. So again, it's looking at that person as an individual. What they want to do with that knee is a big thing. And if there is pain present, then there are set procedures that you look to. But can you also look to, not exhaust measures, but can you look at potential other factors in play that could reduce those symptoms as well? So, and I think that's the first port of call, I think. We've got to look at that. So you're taking the individual's pain threshold into account. You're taking into account what they do with that knee, what they want to do with that knee. Look at the musculature, look at the joint ranges, look at their motor skill. And all of these things will play a little role in that pathology, really, to a degree.
You can see a lot of different training approaches have become quite popular. There's a guy called Ben, I can't remember his surname, he's knees over toe guy. Have you seen? And this sort of like these different ways of addressing knee conditions and sort of like actually putting all the sort of like never put your knees over your toes when you're loading it. And in fact, this is the opposite. This is, you know, build that load up. I mean, I think it kind of probably falls into the category of that it works for some and it won't work for others. But, you know, there seems to be quite a sort of a larger trend with knees and knee health and kind of like all these different approaches. In your years of experience, what do you think?
Yeah, it's like anything, really, and especially from a social media perspective, the more you exacerbate anything, the more you pick out a potential problem or a potential sort of thing that people say and just go against it. You know, you're going to get some sort of lots of feedback. But really, if you understand biomechanics and you understand how we move, then the knee's always gone over the toe. Yeah. You can't go upstairs without the knee going over a toe. So it's always having those forces. I mean, do you have to take them to that extreme? For some people who can get away with it and they have great joint ranges, but there's a balance to this whole thing. And it's asking yourself, well, what do you want to do with that knee? I mean, if he's talking about bulletproofing that knee, I think a lot of people who would try that and attempt that would probably fall foul to some injury because of those extreme ranges. So you look at the end range of what somebody can do, but they don't tend to show the process of what it takes to get there as well. So it's the knee's always gone over the toe. It's not something
people should ever worry about.
Nothing you should ever worry about, no. Yeah. But get you know, your kinematic feedback. You know, how's it feeling?
Yeah,
you know, what's the pressure like down there?
Yeah, you know.
And that's all of these things play a role.
Yeah. Exactly that. Oh, Gareth, look, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ben.
Picking a body part and discussing it.
The knee.
The knee. We'll come back to the hips. Well, maybe we'll do a special on the ankles. But no, it's great to have someone with your knowledge just explain how the knee behaves, what influences it, and how that can affect runners, because it might help someone listening in terms of picking apart a potential problem.
I hope so.
So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ben.
That brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Gareth Cole, and to you, of course, for listening. You can get 6 issues of Runner's World for just £12. Head over to the internet and just search Runner's World UK subscription to get this exclusive offer. It's not that exclusive. It's all over the internet, but you can get it. Please subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. Thank you for listening, and you will hear from us next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.